Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
I'm Anthony McCarthy.
On our way to our conversation, I want to remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. I hope you join them at Money Power Day last Saturday, an incredible event that they help put on every year. And at MeQ, when you invest in MeQ, you invest in yourself. MeQ invests in you. Remember, they are a credit union, not just a bank. So the money really belongs to you, and the bank belongs to you. So go to www.mecu.com, or you can go over to steinershow.org and click on their banner. We're joined here in studio, as usual, on Mondays. Anthony McCarthy is with me, my dear friend, or is what did Bassman say?
He said we were brothers by different mothers.
Right.
That's not so bad.
That's not so bad.
That's not so bad.
Of course, it has its time slot on Fridays, 5 to 7 p.m., we are joined in studio here by Nargis Hyman, who's been a guest on the show many times. You recall that she was a founder of Be Spirit, a nonprofit mentoring and tutoring program in Park Heights that closed last year due to a lack of funding.
Yes.
But she's an author of 3 books of poetry, Let It Flow, Have Faith, Reach Out for Your Dreams. Ran this program for almost 15 years with groups of children in her basement. Incredible work she did.
Incredible.
While being a full-time nurse and more. And it's a pleasure having you in studio, Nargis.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
And pretty soon we'll be joined by Dr. Grady Dale, who's Executive Director of Urban Psychological Services. We're going to send an email out and see where he is. He should be here in just a minute, and we can invite you to join us here at 410-319-8888. Let me start this way. I just want to throw this out here. We've been looking at this, the horrible tragedy of the death of this young woman, Monet Turnage. I would call it Turnage. I turned to a French name. I apologize. But 13 years old. And these two young boys, 12 and 13 years old, are in jail for what it appears to be an accidental murder, right? One of the things that struck me, I keep saying over and over again in my head, watching this thing go around, is about those two little boys.
Boys, yes.
And nobody talks about this. You know, we're talking about the policeman boyfriend who may have been involved in moving the body, could be involved in the moving the gun. We don't know what he did. We don't know what he didn't do. We don't know what happened. We know there was some adult involvement in this episode after this accidental shooting took place. And so, one of my questions I want to explore with you or everybody tonight is: what about those two little boys? Why are they in jail? Why are they in juvenile lockup? Not that I want them in adult lockup, but these kids, if it was an accident, can you imagine the pain these little boys are in? Their
exactly.
best friend,
mm-hmm.
and what they're going through. Why aren't they in, if nothing else, put in Shepherd Pratt, someplace where their parents, they all can come together and kind of get some help, do some therapy, heal these kids. But they're in jail with a lot of other kids who have committed crimes, or allegedly. 12 and 13 years old. That is what struck me about that. I keep thinking about these little boys
yes.
over and over again.
Yes, definitely. I also thought about them as well. And, of course, Monet. But I guess working with African-American males for over 15 years, it just touched my heart because I felt the loss not only for Monet but for the boys as well, knowing that they definitely need some support, a lot of support, not just from family but from the community. And I'm not too sure about the whole situation with the police officer, but I believe it may be an influence of an adult to cause them to make those decisions. But I'm hoping that people in that community, as well as outside of the community, will come together and support those kids.
Mark, it seems like we have fallen into a trap of, and what the people call for justice. There's a call for justice. There's a call for justice. And what that justice does not oftentimes include, especially in the case over the last month that we've seen these cases of juveniles being involved in violent crimes, is justice for the entire community.
Yes.
And healing for the entire community.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I was just here reading some comments that Monet's mother, Edith Turnage, made to the press over the weekend. She says that she doesn't believe that these two boys were charged severely enough, that she believes that they should be charged as adults because they moved her daughter's body, even if it was an accident. She believed they were trying to cover something up, and they should be charged even more severely. And, Mark, as you talked about this last week, I know you and I talked about it over the weekend, big question marks about the psychological impact taking place right now, Nargis, with these two little boys who, for whatever reason, found themselves playing with this gun. And we don't know all the details yet. What we've heard are two young boys make statements to the police, and the police letting some of that leak out. But we don't know the whole story.
Exactly.
But the lives of these children have been impacted. Mm-hmm. And if it is an accident, like the police is reporting, and the young boys evidently have said, then there has to be some sort of, I don't know if we call it interim step, but why aren't these boys home with their families? Why aren't these boys at another facility? Why are they being held, even in a juvenile facility? Why are they being incarcerated right now? So there are a lot of questions about the untimely and just unexplainable death of this young 13-year-old girl. But there are broader questions, Mark, that I think the community wants to talk about, should talk about. And thank goodness we're giving them a venue tonight to explain and talk about.
And I understand the outrage of the mother and
yes,
her
I
feelings.
Do.
I mean, if you know, all of us who are parents,
I mean,
you
can
both have babies,
imagine.
Right?
Yes.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And and you have nieces and nephews who you are very close to. If something happened to one of them, you know, I don't know what I would do if
that's
something
right.
happened to
right.
one of my children.
That's right.
You know,
that's
the anger and pain I would feel when to lash out. So I understand that. But I also understand that many people who were at Monet's funeral on Saturday, from friends of mine who were there, have said, they asked about the little boys, what about these two kids? And it seems to me that a combination of the police and the mayor and other people should be doing something to bring people together, some kind of healing here. This is a huge wound on the psyche of people. I mean, think about how you might respond to that, Nargis, given the work you did for 15 years.
Like I said, I feel that it is a loss for Monet's family as well as for the boys' families. In the community, even if I was in their community, I would step. You know, I would support Monet's family as well as the boys' family. I would make home visits to both families and talk to them and try to even get in contact with the kids and try to make a visit. Because, like I said, I'm working with males. I mean, I know the pressures of life that they encounter, and like I said, it's just a loss, a great loss.
I mean, we also know that kids who are 12 to 13 years old, their brains are not fully developed. They're not completely responsible for everything that goes on. They're really not.
Right.
People want to
they're
say
not.
They are, but
yes,
they're
not. That's
you know,
true.
It's just they're not. They're babies.
Mm-hmm.
And we put them in a violent situation, and they end up becoming. As someone said to me, there are kids when they do commit murders, and there are criminals who are 12 or 13 years old. They can be more vicious than adults, but that can be true. But we're still dealing with children, you know. It seems to me that we have this kind of mentality. We just want to lock people up. Somebody commits a crime, or something happens. The first thing we think is lock them up, and that's the only response we seem to know. So Grady Dale, welcome. Grady Dale is with us. Good to have him in the studio. Welcome, Dad.
I'd be very curious, Mark, as. We're still in the early stages of this investigation, but I think that the conversation about how we dispatch the justice system involves these young boys. I'd be very curious to hear what our listeners think. You read an incredible, powerful story to me before we came on the air about an Indian reservation.
I'll tell you, I just thought it was very striking. And we'll get to the phones here. This struck me. I was reading this book this weekend. I just happened to pick it up at the bookstore. And it hit me. It made me think about this particular incident. I'm not going to read the whole story, but what this is about. In 1881, there was a Brule Sioux leader named Crow Dog who killed this chief Spotted Tail. He rode up and just there was some beef. He shot him through the left breast, and he was killed. So... the people aren't sure why. Was it a personal thing? Was it a political thing? Because Spotted Tail was close to the American government, and Crow Dog wasn't. And what happened? Well, what happened was he was tried by Lakota justice. You know what? And what the punishment was for killing this other Indian leader was that he had to take care of the family of the man he killed for the rest of his life. He had to take care of them like they were his own family and support them. And that he and four generations after him were banned from the tribal land. They couldn't live there. So even though Leonard Crowdog, who was a very famous spiritual leader among the Lakota, who is our age, my age, he was not allowed to live there. Only his grandson has now been allowed to move back to the res. The United States government tried to press him for murder and put him in jail, but the Supreme Court decided in favor of the Indians this time. So what that story said to me was there are a lot of ways of looking at the question of justice. There are a lot of ways of thinking about what we do, and that we live in this very Western Judeo-Christian sense of it has to be punishment, you know, eye for an eye, flog them, throw them in jail, execute, when there are other ways of thinking about how we serve justice. It's not just as simple as we want to make it, and I think these two little boys are an example of that. That's just why I want to throw out to our listeners and to all of you just to wrestle with what's happening to these kids and what other ways we think about dealing with this other than the way that we're dealing with it. Grady, you want to make a comment since you just walked through? We got you. So,
well, number one, thank you, Mark, for inviting me back on your show. First of all, I'd like to give my condolences to the family.
Yes. Yes.
That's important. I live in this community, and I've also have had tragedies of my own in my own family, so I appreciate that. It's very interesting, Mark, that you mentioned about justice, and you know, we can talk about what happens with children in the justice system and how they're dealt with. But I would just say that to make an opening statement, whatever the newspapers have said, whatever the charges were done, these boys hopefully will get thoroughly assessed emotionally. In terms of their maturity, in terms of their ability to understand. So hopefully that'll wind its way out, and hopefully the sensationalism of it will not take over in this case, and we'll have to deal with that. And that's just a backdrop in terms of what you're saying in terms of what justice means for children.
Shall we open the phones here? 410-319-8888. What do you think? Perhaps you live in the community. Perhaps you were at the funeral the other day. And Monet's funeral, and just thinking about where this leads us and where it takes us, and why we are seeing these two young boys incarcerated. Is there another way we could be dealing with this other than that as a community? 410-319-8888. We'll go in the line in the order you called in. Aaron, you're on the air.
Well, hello, Mark.
Hi, Aaron.
Well, as you know, I'm the president of the Neighborhood Association where this occurred.
Right.
And first of all, I don't want us to minimize the role of this police officer because his was a major role in this.
Right, but you know that.
As the adult in this, and we can't give him a pass because he was clearly the adult in this. And to minimize his role, to me, I don't think it's fair because he definitely had a major role. And while these young men may have done wrong, this officer facilitated that wrong, which means I can't throw them under the bus without throwing him in with them.
Well, I agree. I mean, I think that if the police officer or other adults in the situation were part of helping cover this up and helping these children cover it up and make these phone calls and hiding the weapon or even moving the poor young girl's body, then they have to be dealt with. I mean, that has to be addressed.
I think we can't minimize the adult role in this because.
Right.
While it's unfortunate these young men are where they are, this adult facilitated all of this because this whole tragedy could not have happened without this adult's assistance, planning, and direction of it.
You mean the
aftermath?
The aftermath.
The aftermath. Mm-hmm. Without his assistance, direction, and planning, and aiding and abetting it, and for our community that creates a problem because this officer also worked a beat in our community, which really creates a problem.
Hmm. Right.
And we feel, and yes, I attended the funeral, and another thing I was upset about was the fact that the mayor walked in, shook hands, and then walked right out. And really didn't spend a lot of quality time with this family at the funeral. And that's unfortunate. Maybe her schedule was busy. I'm going to give her benefit of the doubt on that, but I thought that was unfortunate. And I understand the mother's anger about throwing these young men under the bus, but before we throw these young men under the bus, let's deal with the adults first, and then we can find a way to help these young people instead of throwing them in jail.
Aaron, I appreciate you being part of this, and I didn't know the story about the mayor just coming in and leaving. That's a shame in itself. I mean, go ahead.
I also had gotten Facebook messages over the weekend from folks who were critical of the mayor for making what they called an appearance and leaving. Now, I would also say, being in politics and having worked in this arena for as long as I have, Mark, it's a double-edged sword. For her to have stayed too long, she probably would have been accused of I don't want to say taking advantage, but turning it into a political advantage. She, I did speak to some folks at City Hall this morning, and they said she came in, she greeted the family at the time that it was the family hour. It was held the night before and then an hour before the funeral. She greeted them and then left. And maybe for her and other people, Mark, this has become an extraordinary distraction. And a lot of people are trying to find answers. This coupled with the murder of the 5-year-old child the week before by her father, allegedly, a lot of people are worried about the state of our children, the state of the safety and well-being of children in these critically difficult times economically, mental health status of a lot of people in our community, drugs, of course, alcohol, addiction, period, that our children are at risk. And that's where the conversation has to really take place. How we begin to create an environment in our homes and in communities, not just in Darley Park, but all over our communities, all over the city of Baltimore, where children are safe. And if they're not safe, how do we get to them early enough? Councilman Stokes said something fascinating in a conversation we had last week. He believes, not in this case, but the other case, that the five-year-old girl, had been the victim of abuse from the time she was born. And somebody knew that. Someone should have stepped up and said, look, I may take heat. I mean, we have this no snitching mentality in our communities, but somebody has to stand for children. And Mark, the sad part is when you and I talked and you said that someone has to take ownership of these two boys, I'm sure that there are circles of our city where people refuse to even have that conversation because of this mentality that we've developed about justice. And I'm not saying there shouldn't be justice, but I'm saying that there are multiple ways for us, as you said, Nargis, about dispatching these children. They have to have, if it was an accident, there has to be a broader question about how we get to this justice that people are talking about.
Yes, if I may piggyback on that, it's very, very, it's very interesting. Sometimes, you know, we get these concepts and they come together. Sometimes we want to talk about justice, and there's nothing wrong with talking about justice. Mm-hmm. What happens is that when we talk about justice, it obscures of people wanting to talk about what is really going on. It's easier to bring up the subject of justice and what to do about children quickly without making the next step in terms of having a real good discussion about how our children are at risk. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very important that we for our audience to keep balance. This whole business and what you all have been talking about, to keep the issue about justice balanced with how we take care of our children, because one conversation can easily overwhelm the other and we lose focus. This situation is horrific. Every time this happens, you just want to feel that this raises the bar just a little bit for people to have some important discussions about our children and about our communities. And as horrific as this is, this is just another example of how the adults, as you all have talked about, have got to step up to the plate in terms of our communities and our children.
Let me open the phones and get folks back in the conversation. Nargis, unless you want to make a comment before we did.
Yeah.
410-319-8888. Linda in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Linda.
Yes. I was just wondering if you would mind mentioning the name of that book, which you just told the
Oh, yeah. The book is called Res Life, An Indian's Journey Through Reservation Life, by David Treuer, T-R-E-U-E-R.
Yeah, I just think it's such an amazing story, and it shows how far apart we are from having a sense of community where these kinds of horrific helpful way.
Linda, listen, I will go on the line and say it. I've said it before in the air, and I'll say it again, that I would say that 90% of everybody who's in jail shouldn't be in jail. I'm going to say 90% of all the people in American prisons should not be in prison. There are other ways of dealing with stuff than locking people up. All we know how to do in America is lock people up and lock black men up and lock people of color up. That's all we know how to do.
By the time we do it, it's way too late.
It's just,
but you know, Mark, I think that there is a – I've heard so many people say, hurt people, hurt people. And there is this sense of I am hurting, I am – there's this lack, this spirit of lack and this – I can't think of the word. It's not coming to me right now. Where then people act out on that lack. And so anything that is viewed as a slight or – we've talked about it on this program, Mark, where people tell us stories about being in a club and someone steps on your shoe.
Oh, that was old,
and they
right?
pull out a gun.
Back in my day, that's what happened. Somebody in your shoes, people got in a fight. So it was ridiculous.
And now they murder you.
Right.
Because of this lack of respect and or what they consider to be disrespect in a situation where everybody is hurting. But yet there still is this sense of outrage. And I'm not sure how we talk about it without trying to draw a line of who's right and who's wrong.
Nargis, go ahead. Then we'll
my question to the question I want to put out there is, what is rehabilitation in the justice system? Because I deal with them, I guess, prior to incarceration, and then when they come home, I deal with them. And when I talk to them about rehabilitation, it's like nothing has occurred.
Right.
I mean, I have to assist them with the resumes, you know, contact, do job skills and development. What is rehabilitation? What are they doing for our men and boys while they're incarcerated?
We do nothing. There are no therapy programs in prison, you know. None of that exists anymore. There are no job programs. They don't prepare people to come back in the street.
Exactly.
80% of all people in jail are going to come back to the street within 10 years of their going in jail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, we do nothing.
Exactly.
And then we just – so what happens is our poorest communities, instead of being part of the power of black culture, it becomes prison culture that takes over.
Yes.
You know, and it's – anyway –
Yeah. And it's right, and that culture is as such. Again, I have to keep on going back to what happens in that culture, especially when folks come back home and they may or may not have been rehabilitated. And unfortunately, much of this unrehabilitation is perpetrated on our children in multiple ways, just not by abuse, but by example and by poor role models. And I must say, without getting into the controversy about guns, you may have talked about it before I got here, but, you know, having guns in the hands of children is very, very lethal. And getting back to this conversation about justice and children, I've had the unfortunate process of having to evaluate children as early as 6 years old who have shot another child.
Yes.
You have to go through that to believe that. And the mindset of a child, of a six-year-old who happens, in this case, in a couple of cases, happen to have a gun in the house, and they didn't know what to do with it, and they shot their playmate. It almost feels like that this is what happened here in terms of the accidental shooting. But again, The guns in our community, if we have any responsibility whatsoever, part of our responsibility is this whole business about guns in the home. I won't get into the whole business about guns on the street, but however responsible adults are supposed to have, even if you have a registered gun, to make sure that they stay out of the hands of our children, because you know they may play with them, this is what happens. And so I think that's a part of the whole business about justice too. What we do with our children in terms of guns.
We're going to take a very brief break. When we come back, we're going to come right back to the telephones. And we're going to go to people, Keith, Leo, Kwame, Michael, have all called in. We're going to go right to your calls, 1234. Others are calling in at 410-319-8888. We're going to rest in with what happened to Monet Turnage But also I'm asking people to wrestle with what just happened to those two little boys and what are we doing about them and why are they in prison instead of being helped? Where's the healing? Where's the help to our community? 410-319-8888. We'll be right back. I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And we are here with Nargis Hyman, who is founder of Be Spirit, a nonprofit mentoring and tutoring center in Park Heights that closed last year due to lack of funds. We covered her Be Spirit program many times, an incredible place for young people to find refuge and help and a way of life in the Park Heights community. She's the author of three books of poetry, Let It Flow, Have Faith, Reach Out for Your Dreams, and is a full-time nurse. Grady Dale is with us, clinical psychologist, executive director of Urban Psychological Services. We're wrestling with what should happen to those two little boys who were accused of accidentally shooting young Monet Turnage, who was buried on Saturday and laid to rest. Read that one thing you read to me from one of your people on Facebook. I think what they say.
I'm going to it right now. Here we go. A couple of people have responded. I just put out over Facebook, just trying to engage folks while we're on the air.
Right.
The conversation of the two boys in East Baltimore, if it was an accident when they shot 13-year-old Monet Turnage, should they be incarcerated right now? Should they be in jail as this investigation goes? I'm surprised, Mark. A lot of people are wrestling with this. Sandra Harris says, look, if it was truly an accident, yes, maybe jail shouldn't be on the table right now. But the story we're getting is so convoluted, I'm not sure what is fact and what is fabrication. David Anthony Wiggins writes, where did they get the gun? Who advised them on how to discard the body? Why are you in the media focusing on the children and not on the adult Baltimore City police officer?
We're going to write the phones here, but let me answer David. Anthony Wiggins, first of all, I think the media is concentrating on the police. I don't see anybody concentrating on these two little boys in the community at all. So the police thing will be resolved. We're going to find out what this policeman did, whether he in fact hid the gun, whether he in fact helped them move the body, how he was involved, how the other people were involved who were adults. They have to deal with the consequences of their adult involvement in the tragedy of this young girl's death. So nobody is talking about the kids, which is why we're talking about the kids. Every other news media in town can talk about the police. That'll be resolved. I want to know what's going to happen to the children. Mm. That's what I want to know. That's why I'm talking about this today on the air. And let's go to a lot of people called in, so let's try to get some people in here on the air. And Keith, you're on the air in Lutherville.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Keith.
I have just a couple of points, but the first point is it's a tragedy all the way around for everybody that's involved in this. You know, I'm like this. If the police had anything to do with this, I mean, to cover anything like it, he should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. But I still go back to the point that when you have firearms in a house, I don't care if it wasn't a police house, if it was another parent there, one of the suspects or something like that. You know, I just know coming up, when I was 12 and 13 years old, you know, first having company in your room was one thing, you know, but you know, a bunch of 12 and 13-year-olds together, you know, without any kind of really adult supervision, you know, you're asking for trouble. You're asking for trouble. And I mean, like I said, you know, there's not going to be no winners here. If it's an accident, then I think these kids can be really rehabilitated because mentally, you never know what these kids are going to go through, these two suspects, for the rest of their life. You know what I mean? Could this be the thing that drive them over the brink criminally, it could be, or they could just wind up being upstanding citizens with something really heavy on their conscience. But a tragedy all the way around, and I just think better supervision from all the adults involved. And I hate to say this, that even includes the victims' parents also. All right. That's my comment.
Thank you so much. Let's go to some other callers, then we'll come back and comment, all right? Is that okay? Let's go to Glenice in Baltimore. You're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Glenice. Welcome.
I am taken back at so many levels. I operate 4 child care centers in Baltimore City, 2 of which are in the Park Heights community, and I'm also a mother of 5. when I heard the story, my heart goes out to the mom, first of all, who lost her child. I cannot begin to imagine what she's going through right now. I have my youngest child is 12. I also think about the boys as well, and I agree. When you hear accident, and I heard about what the Facebook comment was, we're hearing so many different stories, and I think it's really unclear as to what really happened. But these boys, at any level, whether they were responsible, not responsible, accidental, on purpose, they definitely, definitely need some help psychologically to deal with. I can't imagine what's going through their mind as they sit in the cell, as they sit in the room, as they sit at home. No matter where they are right now, they need somebody to talk to them through this process. But I think it goes deeper, just generally across the city, the need for activities for our kids to be engaged in. Even my kids aren't allowed to even play with toy guns, so we don't have water guns. We don't just I want kids to be just genuinely afraid of guns as a whole, and just us having a different understanding of how we deal with kids, what we're exposing them to. Are they being engaged? Are parents watching their kids? Are parents talking to their kids about what's right and wrong? There's so much that can come from this, and to bring some positives out of this horrific experience that this family is going through right now.
I agree completely with Kalinis. I think this is the kind of thing why I raise the issue this way. I know there's some people writing me right now angry because we should be focusing on the police. But I just think that's – we do need to deal with the police. We do need to deal with the kind of behavior of the police in our communities. There's no question about it. But that's not what we're talking about today. We're talking about the children right now, the children.
Mark, on my Facebook, Fontella Robinson just wrote in. She said, put them in jail. Maybe the next time they will think long and hard before picking up a gun. The boys were wrong, and so was the, quote, training day cop involved in this case. Very interesting. A lot of people are very
Well, I think I could take a comment on that. Children, especially, I know this is kind of a simple statement, but children don't think like adults. The throwaway, the you lock them up and throwing away the key does not and has not helped children at all. This is why the juvenile system and the adult system is very, very careful for what you do with children. Children who are perpetrated upon and who do perpetration and are locked up and spend time in lockup, if they remain in lockup for any length of time, that is a time where they learn to be bitter, where they learn to be anger, and these are your future perpetrators and people who go out and abuse others. It is important, and it doesn't take away from the children's action. Even at 12 and 13 years old, you work with them and you try to help them deal with the responsibility of their actions. But we do not want to perpetrate more criminals by locking up children.
Let's go back to the phones, if we might. On the way, Michael Scott has written in, by the way. If the two boys answer the question I put on Facebook, he said no. Facetious says you shouldn't be in prison because we are a country that locks up first and asks questions later, and increasingly criminalizes youth, and only theoretically assumes them innocent before proving they're guilty, and invests heavily, both through privately held and publicly financed stock exchange traded prisons, prison companies that every year places billions of dollars in bets that this assumption is the self-fulfilling fate of our children that begins prophesizing at the age of 10 to ensure it, putting people in jail. I think that is a big piece of what's going on here as well. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's go to Tracy. You're on the air.
Hi, good evening, gentlemen.
Hi, Tracy.
I just wanted to say that it really distresses me that this is the time we decide to rally. Like, there's so many resources in Baltimore City to support families, and they are not getting the support that they need to be able to support children. And the opportunities that we have to get them the resources, like the schools, through the bottle tax, we don't take advantage of it when we fight these opportunities that we have to support resources going to children to help prevent these kinds of things. And I know, like, for myself, I'm a mediator, and I work in community mediation, and we mediate in the schools, and we mediate in the prison.
Thank you so much. Did we just lose her? Okay.
I think that was Tracy Ford. She's a dynamic young leader.
Oh, yes,
in
Tracy
mediation
Ford. Yes.
And several parts of the community. She's really special.
Let's get another caller in here. We'll come back to our guest in the studio, 410-319-8888. Leo, you're on the air.
Yes. Good evening, Mark Steiner.
Hi, Leo. How are you, man?
Fine. Anthony McCarthy,
Leo,
and Dr. Grady Dale.
Great to talk to you.
Yes. Hey. I must tell you, I am also frustrated. I'm sympathetic to your position, Mark, with regard to the children, but we don't really know what happened. Do children of that age know the difference between life and death if they're teenagers? I submit, generally speaking, yes, they do. But what's frustrating, Dr. Dale, is that this society promotes sex, violence, and drug usage. We have a culture that promotes, societal culture, that promotes the use of guns, whether they be handguns or rifles. So at what point and what organizations are going to step up to the plate by way of follow-up in terms of changing this system with respect to juvenile justice? We don't know that this was not involuntary manslaughter, but we think it was an accidental murder, not the least of which, of course, and you don't want me to say this, but I think your police commissioner might be orchestrating a cover-up. But we'll see by Friday what Bielefeld has to say on this issue. But what do we do about accidental shootings, if in fact they're accidental? Why aren't our legislators and our clergymen charting a course, a remedy, so that this doesn't happen every 6 to 8 months, because it's going to happen again? And I keep hearing the same refrain over and over again. We don't know what to do. We don't know how to do it. That's nonsense. We've got people with all kinds of credentials who know how. They don't have the political will. They don't have the moral will to do it. How do we get a stiffening of the spine, so to speak, gentlemen, in our community by way of follow-through in changing the system? What do we do?
Well, Leo, thank you for that comment. Okay. That's a mouthful. I can't speak completely to the juvenile justice system, although I've worked in the juvenile justice system. But I will say this about children, and it's very interesting. And there are a number of studies that have talked about this. Children, in an interesting sort of way, may know what they've done, but may not understand what they've done. Now, you may think that that's splitting hairs. With children, that's not splitting hairs. A child can do something and then don't understand the complete ramifications about what he's done until after he's done it for whatever reason it is. And I think you are right. This whole business about how we teach children not only what's right and wrong, but what they understand and what they don't understand and what does it mean. And the adults, even if you talk about solutions, and Mark and Anthony and my guests can understand this better than anything. You know, I don't know what's being done, for example, in the community at this point to have particular communities actually step up to the plate to teach children about firearms and what they are and what they're not. If we did that with children 12, 13, and 10 years old with responsible adults and have courses around the city where we actually can teach children what firearms are and what they mean, even though they may not completely understand all the ramifications they use it, but the teacher have a whole process for teaching that, I think it would probably help. It certainly would not hurt.
Hmm. Mark, I'm curious at where our outrage goes in this community, not just in Baltimore, but great tragedies like the death of this 13-year-old, and how we are just heartbroken right now. 2 weeks from now, we will have refocused our energies and our efforts on the issue of the day. I really do believe, Mark, remember I met Mayor Nutter of Philadelphia, and he told the story of the previous mayor of his city got so fed up with juvenile death that children were literally being shot and murdered in their streets continuously. And they focus like a laser beam. They put their dollars where their dollars needed to go. They funded community centers. They funded basketball leagues. They funded mental health therapy. They funded family wraparound services to the point where they almost wiped out juvenile deaths. And now, you know, like a lot of places, Boston and other places, where they saw this major cut in juvenile deaths and violent crime against juveniles, they're starting to see it creep up again because in these tough economic times, I hate to say it, economic priorities become the decision maker.
Right.
But, boy, when will we really? And I haven't seen it in Baltimore. I've worked for two administrations. I have never seen us focus on children. To the point where they are truly our number one priority.
We're not focusing on kids. We don't focus on our schools. We're not dealing with what's going on in our schools in terms of putting the kind of right money into them, build the schools where they're supposed to be built, construction our schools where they're supposed to be reconstructed. We're not doing anything that meaningfully cares about our kids. And I agree with you. I think that's part of the problem. Our monies are being spelled elsewhere, and that's our future we're talking about. And to answer Leo's question from my perspective, we don't know what happened with these kids. My question is, if it is accidental, mm-hmm. is there another way of dealing with our children to commit to these things happen than putting them in prison? And I maintain there has to be when a kid's that young.
Kathy Brennan, one of our listeners right now, Mark, wrote, every child needs an adult who loves and cares for them. Monet appears to have that. Did her alleged killers have that?
I don't know. I don't even know about Monet's life.
We don't know. Goes back to we don't know what was actually happening in terms of the relationship between those children.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't know. Children are capable of what we call empathy, so there's no question about that.
Right.
But, you know, and however they were huddled around mm-hmm. and showing this gun and playing with this gun, they were, you know, they very well, even though the situation will come out in the long run, they very well may have been friends.
Mm-hmm.
And they were friends, and then it comes down to the question of, did even all of those kids, when they were huddled around that gun, did they really understand the ramifications of what happens if they pulled that trigger?
410-319-8888 is the number here. Do you want to make a comment before we go back to the phones?
Yes, I do. Pretty much I was thinking about this horrific event and how I know it's all after the fact that we can have teachable moments thinking about, you know, because of the situation, families should be talking about this in a home. It should be talked about in school and churches, after school programs, activities, athletic activities. And we need to even businesses, you know, they, kids come in stores all the time. It could be a sign, honesty is the best policy, or, you know, talk to our kids. It's just having an open communication. And I still talk to the kids all the time, although the program, you know, is not functioning. I still talk to them, and I will, you know, discuss this. And I think it's just very important to have open communication with not just your own kids, but kids in your community.
We turn to the phones here, 410-319-8888. And Renee, you're on the air. Hi, Renee, you there? Welcome. All right, well, let's go to the next caller then. 410-319-8888. And Mel, you're on the air.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening, Mel.
Yeah, I've been listening for the last 2 minutes, and we're always talking about ramification. It seems like a whole lot of social issues is being simultaneously addressed. Well, Mark, I do agree with you that education is key. The more educated people become or society becomes, they tend to be more accountable, okay? Now, a kid shooting a kid, we all know that's crazy. And it's been happening quite frequently for the past decade, you might say. Now, a lot of these younger people, they evolve or was born to parents who have a lot of mental health issues. Consequently, parents have mental health issues. It's not being addressed appropriately. They're either being incarcerated or some other kind of penalty other than being treated for their illness. So now they make children, and they do the same thing. And it's a culture. It just goes on and on and on and on and on. Of course, I don't believe those kids meant to shoot each other. God forbid that ever happened, and I'm so sorry that it happened. But what if the adults at times is going to take some responsibility? A few years ago, you had guys. And what did their parents who was negligent with their weapons had to go out and give community talks of the importance of this and the importance of that. Remember that? dying rhino style, his kids took the gun, shot somebody.
Right.
What
right.
is wrong with the adults that's pulling the gun? I think there needs to be put some pressure on them, too. You know, if the adults realize, hey, if I got this loaded handgun around the house and something happens, you know what? I'm going to face a doggone lifetime. Not my 5-year-old grandson or my 10-year-old son. I'm going to face that time. I think they will take it a little more serious. I mean, it's a sad situation, and we could all this and preach about that. But
all right, well, Mel, appreciate it. No, I think that's true. I mean, I think in many ways,
yes.
I mean, that is the case. And and this is, I think that, you know, when young people commit certain acts, parents and the adults in their lives have to be held accountable on some levels, especially
yes.
that young.
Yes, that's true.
Yes.
410-319-8888. Ben, you're on the air.
How you doing?
Hi, Ben. Welcome.
Good topic. You know, when we talk about kids, I'll be real quick about it. I had an opportunity to see how a full-functioning recreational center, the positive impact, when I say a fully functioning, I mean a complete, comprehensive, functional recreation center / community center, how it has a positive impact on the community. And the District of Columbia, they've taken upon a project of revamping and rebuilding rec centers. And there's one in particular in Northwest D.C., that they have just about anything, any type of arts, sports, academic things for kids, they have it. And that community, the particular community that it's in now, saw such a tremendous reduction in juvenile crime, delinquency, and all these other things, mainly because these kids are now having a place to go. And not only, you know, run up and down a basketball court, it's not only that, it's the educational aspect and even the performing arts for the girls and you know and boys and what have you. And just to make your kids more well rounded, you know, and more prepared and more motivated academically, you know, I don't see that in Baltimore. Matter of fact, I kinda see the opposite, which is a dangerous thing and you know, and also with these school systems, I don't know why no one has thought about just taking the boys and girls and separating them at least through the formative years of education so that your kids can focus and learn how to conduct themselves in conflict resolution and things of that nature. But it's going to cost a little money, you know, but the impact of it in the long run, because, you know, poor schools and youth violence is not just a black. See, we look at it as a black issue. It's an American issue. And once we start looking at universally as an American issue and not just a black issue, I think, you know, it'll be addressed more. It'll be addressed instead of trivialized like it is now.
Ben, I think you raised some interesting issues. Can you comment on some of these things that Ben has raised?
Well, I wanted to
mention,
and maybe folks who are more knowledgeable than I am, when this gentleman talks about a quote-unquote fully functioning recreation center, for folks around this table, do we know of a fully functioning recreational center in this town? Maybe somebody will call in and tell me a fully functional recreation center in this town. If you know one, please tell us because we would like to know it. I don't
haven't
know
seen one in a long time, Dr. Green.
A long time. And the question of boys and girls being separated, I mean, that's something that's been debated for a long time. And, you know, people have their druthers. Some things co-ed is the way to go. And some people think all boys, all girls are the way to go. But I think that the issue that that we have to wrestle with here, and I want to stay on top of this over the next few weeks as this unfolds, I think that it behooves the police department to put something out here on the table and not let this thing string along. I mean, I know that's been an investigation, but there comes a time when people have to talk to the community about what's going on and not just let this thing kind of string out. It didn't take them long to put the little boys in jail. It shouldn't take this long to put the story out on the street, it seems to me, for people to wrestle with. And for us to kind of look at how we should be responding, I think maybe, I mean, I don't know, I would hope that in the school that there's counseling going on at the moment with those kids. I would imagine, I would hope there's, I haven't heard that one way or the other.
I haven't heard, Mark, but boy, I saw the coverage of the funeral and I saw these absolute heartbroken little kids.
I know.
And at the vigil the night before, there were, I mean, little girls and little boys actually weeping.
Yeah, of course.
And I thought to myself, well, my God, Are we leaving it just to these parents to figure out how they're going to cope, how their children are going to cope with this horrific tragedy on both sides, this horrific tragedy? And there's got to be. I would have to believe that the school system is counseling these children.
I would like to believe that. I would like to ask Dr. Alonzo, you know, what's happening. And that may be important to ask the Dr. Alonzo in the aftermath of them. What is happening in terms of the trauma deal with the children who are indirectly affected by this? And it may be. That's important to hear. And by the way, interesting about the police departments, they're dealing with this. You know, among all the stuff that we're talking about, maybe this is a time for the police department to not only step up to the plate in terms of talking about how we're going to resolve this case, but the police department also can actually say something about what they want to contribute to this community in terms of promoting recreational centers, or what they can do as a police department. This may be a time for the police department to say something more than what they're saying now.
I think so, too. I think this is a time when they need to be calling in all kinds of forces here to kind of take it what you were saying as well, Anthony, that these is a community where most people do not have the money or the health insurance probably to make sure their kids get the therapy they need, which isn't covered by health insurance anyway.
That's right.
To to come in and really put their hands around to say to people at our community conferencing center, to people like Dr. Grady Dale, to come into the communities and help heal them, to bring people together to talk. This is what has to happen now. And I know people are upset saying you should be talking about the police. Well, we'll leave it to other radio stations right now to talk about the police. Let's see what they say in a few days. And then if it's not adequate, we will deal with it. And if this guy who's a police officer really, in fact, was involved, he needs to pay the price for being involved in covering whatever he covered up and hurting these children even more and families more than they were hurt. So, but I will go on record again as saying that we need to figure out how to deal with these two young boys whose lives have been shattered by the terrible death of young Monet Turnage. And so I want to thank you all for calling in, and I want to thank my guests for being here with us today. It's always a pleasure to have Dr. Grady Dale in the studio. Very erudite,
thank you.
Thoughtful man, Dr. Grady Dale, clinical psychologist, executive director of Urban Psychological Services. Nargis Hyman, founder of Be Spirit, working with kids in Center Park Heights for 15 years.
About 17
years. 17 years. and had to close to lack of funding, worked out of her basement. Incredible amount of work that she did with these kids that we covered a long time. Also a poet. Let it flow, have faith, reach out for your dreams, and still in her healing profession as a nurse. Good to have you both with us. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks.
Anthony and I will be right back.